Yesterday's announcement of proposed new emissions limits on power plants in the country showed a commitment in the federal government, at the White House anyway, to addressing climate change. But efforts to slow and reverse global warming are targeting all levels of government. That includes the local level. The Eugene City Council is taking steps to consider a climate recovery ordinance presented by a group of children. The guiding force here is the group Our Children's Trust, based in Eugene. Gordon Levitt is the law clerk for Our Children's Trust and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Gordon, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me this morning, Jeff.
Tell us about Our Children's Trust and how it got started.
So Our Children's Trust was started in 2011 here in Eugene, Oregon, and the goal of the organization is to elevate the youth voice on climate change to all decision makers throughout government around the world.
Is there something of a double entendre on the name, something like earning Our Children's Trust?
Exactly. It's our opinion that government leaders should be doing all that they can on climate change as the defining issue facing this generation, and to earn the trust of children moving forward, that government is an effective force.
And what have been some of the strategic moves you've made thus far? I mean, this is a strategy essentially of making children front and center in the process.
So in 2011, there were actions brought in pretty much every state around the United States and against the federal government. Those are either lawsuits or petitions for rulemaking. And now, in the last year here in Eugene, we've been working on the local level to present actions that municipal governments could take to protect youth's future.
The petitions for rulemaking are generally aimed at the state level, though, aren't they?
Yeah, those are to the relevant state environmental agencies. So, for example, the Department of Environmental Protection in Pennsylvania, we have a petition that's moving forward there right now.
Is there a petition at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality?
In Oregon, we have a lawsuit right now. Oral argument was heard at the University of Oregon School of Law back in January, and we're awaiting a decision from the Oregon Court of Appeals, which should be coming out any week now.
Does the fact that it's in the Oregon Court of Appeals indicate that it did not get the result you wanted in trial court, or was this where it started?
The case was dismissed at the trial court level, and then we appealed, and we're going through the appellate process right now.
What was the basis for the dismissal? I'm curious about the general response from courts thus far to the kinds of cases you're filing, and what is the general nature of the cases you're filing?
So the general nature of the cases that we've been filing is asking government to do their utmost on climate change and to fulfill what's called their public trust obligations. So in state constitutions and state statutes, it's a little bit different in each state. There are provisions saying that government is a trustee towards the resources. So in most states, this includes water resources. In some states, it's including wildlife or access to recreation. And so it logically makes sense that they would, as trustees, also be responsible for taking care of a resource such as the atmosphere and what we do in terms of emissions to affect the atmosphere. So the basis of the dismissal, it's different in every case and in state, but in Oregon it was based on a doctrine called the political question doctrine, which basically says that the court doesn't want to interfere with the operation of the legislative and executive branch, says that we don't want to be involved with this question because it's a question that's more suited for the legislature or the executive.
So I'm curious, Gordon, what dictates then, state by state, whether you decide to approach via lawsuit or whether you decide to approach via petitions for rulemaking?
A lot of that is resource-based, so the partners that we're able to work with on the ground, the other attorneys, and some of it is strategic, based on whether the department already has a rule for emission reductions and planning for climate change that would be better to just amend rather than go through the litigation process.
And how would you characterize the success or lack of it thus far for what's going on with Our Children's Trust and its efforts? And you're in all 50 states at this point?
The efforts are different in all the different states, but yeah, we're working with youth across the country.
All right.
I would say that the success has been really inspiring to see, especially in the messaging. I've been watching the pronouncements and the public messaging that different politicians are using. And if you listen to, for example, President Obama this past Saturday was talking about the regulations on the existing power plants and his announcement that he made yesterday. And he references why we need to do this for our children, for future generations, and that it's, you know, staking out the moral and the moral ground for doing this.
So your language essentially is getting adopted by people in positions of power.
That's what I'm seeing more and more, is that it's a really relevant messaging frame to talk about how our action or inaction affects future generations and youth that are alive today.
And what kinds of targets are you aiming for, whether through legal action or petitions for rulemaking? Are there particular sets of metrics you're looking for, kinds of activity specifically you want to produce through these actions?
Absolutely. So using the best available science that we have on climate change right now, which is being constantly updated. There was recently the National Climate Assessment that got released a few weeks ago, and the International Panel on Climate Sciences releasing new reports throughout this year as well. We would like to see 6% emission reductions of carbon dioxide each year for the number of years moving forward, and then towards the end of the century, because that's what's necessary to get us back to an atmospheric concentration of carbon dioxide that's safe for climate function moving forward. So the science gets kind of complicated, but we would like to see those levels of emission reductions and government being responsible for implementing a climate recovery plans that achieve those reductions.
Are you shooting specifically for the 350 goal, the 350 carbon parts per million in the atmosphere?
Correct.
All right. Where do we stand with that, though? Because I think the last thing I saw, and it's been several months now, was that we're generally hanging pretty far over that now.
Yeah, so last year, I don't remember the exact month now, but there was a month where we were over 400 parts per million on average each day, because it fluctuates for most of the month. And that is, you know, we're moving away from the target. So each year that we wait to take these sort of serious emission reduction actions, the harder it will be to get back to that 350 target by the end of the century.
Gordon Levitt is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a law clerk for Our Children's Trust, which is making climate change moves across the country, either through legal action in the courts or through petitions for rulemaking with state governments. And there are efforts going on before the Eugene City Council as well, which we'll get to in just a moment. You can join us on the Exchange about climate change, global warming, and efforts to curtail it around the country. 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the kids in Eugene already did deliver, and pardon me if I'm using the term kids too pejoratively or something, but they did deliver something to the city council late last year, apparently.
Correct. So in December of last year, the youth here in Eugene delivered the climate recovery ordinance that Our Children's Trust had helped them to draft. And while the council is not moving forward with all of the components of the ordinance that were there, some of the main actions that the youth campaign wanted them to take, they are in the process of drafting an ordinance now to achieve those goals. I mean, it needs to be passed at a public hearing in July, but I'm optimistic that they're going to have the vision and the leadership to do it.
Was there a sense at the time that if you delivered this to the council, they might have taken quicker action? I mean, or is this about the timetable you had expected?
I personally have never done anything like this with a city council or a local government, so I wasn't entirely sure what to expect. I think it's probably about the time frame that we did expect it. Obviously, given the urgency of the situation, it would have been nice for things to move faster, but I'm incredibly grateful that the council is being supportive of the proposals now, and it was great to see a 7-1 vote last week in support of drafting this this ordinance. Councillor Alan Zelenka, in particular, played a huge role in advocating for this.
And so, I mean, obviously the idea is to think globally and act locally, and this is local action, going to the city council and saying, can you do something for us? But beyond symbolism, what would be the impact of such an ordinance in a city like Eugene? And are there things specifically within the city limits of Eugene that can be done?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the goals that they're going to put into ordinance form now is that all city operations be carbon neutral by 2020. So that means that the city will be responsible for retrofitting anything in its buildings that could reduce carbon emissions and getting the impact as low as possible. And they may have to buy some carbon offsets or support local projects that sequester carbon, you know, wetland restoration, other things along those lines. But I think showing that local governments do have the capacity to make substantial progress on this issue. And I think what's most important to consider, too, is that if comprehensive federal and state action on climate change did come about, local governments are going to have to make drastic changes anyway. So to the extent you can plan and be on the front end of those solutions and be more prepared, then it's going to be an easier transition.
This is obviously more than a statement and more than a resolution, because you gave the council specific wording. You mentioned that some components ended up getting left out thus far, although the charge to the city staff is to draft an ordinance. But is it being drafted with some chunks missing from what was proposed by Our Children's Trust?
Just some small things. So the parts that have been left out are some of the public trust doctrine principles for how the trustee, so the city government, would go about making environmental decisions. But the substantive policy that we wanted them to make a stronger commitment to, so carbon neutrality in city buildings, fossil fuel use reduction by the city, and then policies to reduce fossil fuel use in the community, those are all moving forward. So I would say that the main part of what we wanted to see, the substantive actions, is going as we had envisioned, as the youth wanted.
And what has been happening, though, in the intervening time? I mean, we're talking about just a vote last week in the month of May, then that would have been. The ordinance was presented in December. So what's been the intervening action, if any?
So in the time in between, youth and adults that are supportive have been going to city council and continuing to testify, continuing to tell their story about how climate change is already impacting them and what they would like, what kind of actions they'd like to see. And Our Children's Trust met with the Sustainability Commission in town and went and testified and was meeting with city councilors individually to make sure that this proposal was something that would work for the community. So it, at some level, there was just politics going on.
Let us take a call. We have Pam and Dexter on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Gordon Levitt at Our Children's Trust about efforts to get the Eugene City Council to pass a local climate recovery ordinance.
Hi. Well, I would love to expand it out to Lane County, but we have Jay Bozovich as a county commissioner, as well as a couple others that are in total denial. Jay Bozovich says the climate's always changing. That's his response about climate change action. And I just wanted to say, here in Oregon, we have these forests that are some of the top carbon sequestering forests in the world. And I really want to make the connection of cutting down our forests and clear cutting and stopping that and doing more selective cutting and sustainable cutting, because we really do contribute to sequestering the carbon from the air. And then a friend of mine recently told me about a theory, I guess it's pretty long in the activist community, that 2% of the people get the action going, and then when you get 10% of the people following it, then the rest, the 90% of the quote-unquote sheeple will follow what the lead is. And I really think that makes a lot of sense, because most people are too busy to do, you know, to really be up on the issues. And I think if 10% of the people who are knowledgeable and active on an issue, and climate change to me is the issue of our times, then that's what we should be going for. And this is some symbolic action, but every time we raise awareness and we get more people understanding how important it is, the better off we are on getting the changes we need. So that's my take, and thanks for all your work. And is this affiliated with Professor Mary Wood's work? And I'll listen on the radio.
All right, thanks for that. Appreciate it, Pam.
Thanks, Pam. So the public trust doctrine and the expansion, the use of it now in these legal actions is influenced by Professor Mary Wood's work. And just to talk about a few of the points that you just made there, I think that you are correct that it does take a small group of people putting in the time to move conversations forward, and that's been a really inspiring part of doing this local campaign, is to see the energy that the youth here in this city have to make a real change and how optimistic they are about what they can do and accomplish, even though the science is kind of, it's kind of scary sometimes.
Scary in the sense of if we don't change something, things could get fairly dire?
Exactly, and I'm an optimist, so I like to think that we'll be able to adapt to a lot of the changes that will happen, but based on my knowledge of science, some of these things, they look really bad, you know, crop failure and things along those lines. So I'm excited to see that youth feel that they can make a difference and that their leaders are listening to them.
So let's talk about the youth, because, I mean, obviously it's you and me talking adult to adult. The kids, well, should be in school this time of day anyway. So who recruits the students for the effort and how?
So last summer, we organized our Children's Trust, a community potluck of sorts, and we showed this film, How the Kids Save the Park, which was a story of how a group of youth down in Yuba City in California banded together to save a state park that was in threat of being closed, and how they advocated to the state government and in their community to make that happen. And so we explained to these families and the youth what we wanted to try and accomplish here in Eugene, and to hear their thoughts and whether they wanted to be involved. And they submitted applications, and we were only expecting to have about 25 applications for this two-day youth climate leadership training that happened last September. And instead, we had 50 youth ranging in age from, I think, 8 to 20 that attended this two-day training, learning about climate science and how to talk with decision makers, how to use social media effectively. And that was the selection process, if you will. It was all self-motivated.
That's impressive. You got twice as many people as you expected to get.
Yeah, it was fantastic, and we've had really great youth engagement in some of the other projects that we've done locally. So we painted a mural with the help of this great eco-muralist here in town that shows sort of the two different futures, if you will, that we're facing based on the decisions that we make now on climate change. And it was great to work with the youth on that, and we're hoping to have a film of this local effort completed by the fall.
So, Gordon Levitt, I have to ask how tricky it is to channel the enthusiasm that young people would naturally have for this or any other effort for which they are volunteering, and at the same time educating them on things like the relative slowness of the political system. How do you keep them from getting discouraged and turning into glass half empty people?
That is a great challenge that you present. And on a weekly and a monthly basis, it's a challenge to continue to frame the issue as we are moving forward. There is progress happening here. They're talking about the best way to do this. And I think that what we've done is just to try and keep events with the youth fairly frequently, and to try and have fun with it. But you're right, it is a challenge to have them stay motivated with how slow political change can be, even in a community like Eugene that really is striving to do the best things on climate change most of the time.
And of course, Eugene, you know, being a smaller city, can at least get some things done in a time frame, unlike what, for example, the U.S. Senate can do. But still, we're talking about. So now, what's left? A public hearing in July? Is that right?
Yeah. So the ordinance is being drafted by city staff right now, and the public hearing is set for July 21st. And we're hoping that the city council will take action on the issue after that public hearing and pass a progressive climate law here in Eugene that other cities can use as an example for moving forward.
Are there other cities you're targeting in Oregon at this point?
We have identified a few other cities in Oregon that we may want to work with, and we have youth and partner organizations in Washington that have contacted us and would like to get some of these actions started also, because really, regardless of the impact substantively that these actions can have, the engagement of youth in the political process and learning how to be citizens in our democracy is really valuable.
It really is. How soon before the July 21st hearing will the ordinance be out for review?
I'm unaware at this time of when it will be available.
All right. We'll have to check back on that. So we're talking about a climate recovery ordinance being considered in the city of Eugene. Gordon Levitt is a law clerk for Our Children's Trust, which proposed the wording for the original ordinance. That's obviously going to get changed a bit down the road. Gordon, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff.
You bet. That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. We'll talk to Jolene Hart in hour number two. Her book is Eat Pretty.